This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
Don't fall into that trap. It's that that Zen story that was told, that I heard many times, of the woodsman and his apprentice, his young lad. He sent him to the top of the tree, to climb to the top of the tree, because he had a bit of work to do up there, a bit of cutting or something. But it was quite a quite a challenging climb, quite dangerous actually, and so he had to proceed with great caution, otherwise there'd be an accident and the woodsman would be at the bottom, and the lad was set off. So now you be very careful, you go every step you take, every move you make, you just be forever vigilant, be ever mindful, so that it's not an accident. And the lad climbed to the top of the tree and he did his work quite safely. And so he starts to come down. And when he gets closer to the bottom, his master shouts out, "Watch it!" Because that's the most dangerous time, when you think that the job is over, that he could relax, that the danger was over, and so his mind could wander off and he'd get lackadaisical. And that's precisely the most dangerous time, that he loses his attention and then an accident could happen because he thinks it's nearly all over. And it's a great story for us and our training, that we should be ever vigilant right to the very last bell, to the last moment, and not think that we're in the home straight and we relax and let go. It's a very good story to remind ourselves of. So we keep this day going the same as we keep all the days going. And that goes for tomorrow morning also. So, as is customary in these occasions, as this is the last talk, I try to relent to some degree and give other people the limelight, reluctantly. And throw it open to questions. So if you have anything that's come up over these days, anything to do with the talks, to do with practice, I'm not interested in philosophy, let's explore them.
In our sitting practice, we meant to keep our concentration on the abdomen. So when we're in that everyday awareness practice, should we try and keep to that same central frame, that same place?
I think it's a good place to be aware of as you come and go, because it has an association. You know why, and it gathers you up, and it makes you realise that you're practicing the Dharma, and you're coming into your body. And you're coming into what's in front of you, You're not wandering off in your thoughts. So that loneliness, that sort of association is, I think, is very useful, because it's a reminder. It's almost like a bell going off. Like, you know, in some monasteries they have a bell that goes off every few minutes, just to remind everybody where their consciousness should be. So in that can act as a reminder, but also it means that you are actually, hopefully, you are in your body, and you're aware of your body, you're aware of that place. So that when you are in your body, by definition, you'll be here. When you're in your body, you're not in your head. And if you're not in your head, there's only one other place to be, as it were, and that's in this present moment. So all of these things are helpful. All of these things are little skillful things that we can cultivate in our day-to-day training, so that we are forever being wakeful, so that we're being aware, being alive to the present moment, which is, that's all we're doing. We're just waking up to where we are anyway, rather than be off somewhere with our thoughts. This is all this training is about. It's just to come back to actually where you never leave. Not for a moment do we leave where we are, right here and now. Never have done, never will do. But we need to remind ourselves of that, and be forever returning to this moment as it's described, and being in your body, being in this place. As I was saying yesterday or day before, whatever, that if you can get a little sense of resistance here, it's almost like a little frustration within this part of your body, to me has always been an indication that that you are containing yourself, that you're not running wild with your thoughts and your emotions, which means that you have no sense of this moment. By definition, you're just somewhere else doing something else, as it were, or so you imagine you are. So by coming back, returning to your awareness, returning to what's in front of you, giving yourself 100% wholeheartedly to whatever it is that you happen to be with at the time, whether it be something a physical activity, or whether you're just sitting like this, is that you can be 100% with that experience. And if you do that, that alone is an act of containment, because we are not used to that. We are used to being in our thoughts and in our emotion. We're used to being anywhere, actually. It doesn't matter how you want to describe whatever it is. We're used to being anywhere. Anywhere will do, but this moment. We don't do this moment. We avoid it at all costs. We don't want to be with ourselves. We don't want to be here. This is why, this is samsara. This is the conditionality that we become consumed by, living in a dualistic creation. Anything will do. But if we do this, put this training in place skillfully, we'll be gathering that up. We'll be gathering those habits up. We'll be gathering them up and coming to what's in front of us, so that when we gather, we're collecting the energy, that the heart energy, the life force that's used to wandering all over the place, continually, never stopping. We are now bringing it back to where it should be, which is in the here and now, right here, not in the past, not in the future, but what is in front of us. And just the mere act of gathering that up will almost certainly give you some sensation of a collecting energy that otherwise would be off, would be expending itself in thought, word and deed, is now being kept, being harnessed, like I was giving the analogy of the training of the wildness, is that you're gently pulling on the reins and just keeping yourself here, being alive to being here. And by doing that, you will quite likely get that sensation that it's a frustration because something wants to run off. It's used to running off. It's used to getting its way. And so you get that little frustration there that is a real act of containing restlessness, a real saying no. That this isn't the Dharma. This is samsara. This is the experience of suffering. I am following my habits. I am reinforcing them. Things that go around in circles that do not give me the sense of life being fulfilled, but being fragmented, being in a permanent state of agitation, of frustration. This is what we are now containing. This is the nature of our training. This isn't a thought process. This really hits at the nature of our particular, and it's not all training is like this. All Dharma trainings have different ways of approach. This is our approach, which is as a non-conceptual. We have nothing to cultivate in our mind of any great importance. we learn to gather up and come back to what is in front of us. Right here, we don't create anything. We actually wake up. We wake up. We awaken to this present moment, to where we are, where we have always been, and where we will always be. It is that commitment to do that, and that is absolutely tasting the ice cream. That is doing it. This is a doer. This is a doing training. This isn't a thinking training. It's a doing where you determine, where you remind yourself, as I've been speaking this week, remind yourself of the bottom line of what this is about. It's awareness. When you're in awareness, when you're truly with your awareness, you are neither in the future nor in the past, but you are here. Your awareness is the present moment. It is not separate from it. It is it. It is not something that's tacked onto it. It is it. So the more you can be with your awareness, the more that you are here, you are present in this moment. That means that you are not chasing, you are not bound by, you are not lost in your fantasies, in your self-image that is to do with the past and the future, but you are right here. That's what it is. That is not complicated. I'm not suggesting it's easy to pull it off, but it's not a complicated concept, is it? Because actually in this moment there isn't anything, there's nothing to think about. When you think, you lose the moment. There isn't anything to think about. So how can it be complicated? It is simplicity itself. In fact, it's so simple we can't clock it. We're not familiar with that simplicity. We're familiar with complication, busyness. And it's for us with awareness, to make use of awareness, to see that awareness is the key. Our awareness is the very heart of our training. And awareness is the simplest thing in the world, because there isn't anything there. Can't possibly say awareness is complicated. It isn't made of anything. Therefore it cannot be simpler. Come to your awareness and you know that this is Dharma, this is the Dharma, this is, I'm at home, I'm at the center of my being, I am not lost. And that very cultivation, that willingness to come back, you will see that when you come back into your awareness, you are alive, you are aware of your body, you know that you are this entity, that you are not some fanciful entity in your imagination where you completely lose yourself and you don't know who you are and where you are, but you know you're here with your feet are firmly on the ground and you are nowhere else. That is a gathering. That is in the body. You are in the body. You are coming to the body with awareness, because awareness is in the body. It is not a part of your conditionality. It is away from that, if it has a center, if it has a home, it's in your body. It is much more, you can find it more readily in your body than you'll find it in your head. If you come into your body and aware of your body, there's no thought there. If you have that experience, then you're at home, you're at one, you found your center, stay there. And in that commitment to come and to stay there, you will naturally, in the body, you will naturally gather this energy that's used to, as I'm saying, the energy which is used to going here and there, expending itself. Of course, that's the life force. This is the draining, the energy that we drain from ourselves through the day, so that we end up being tired. That there we learn to not expend it, but learn to keep it. Pull on the reins, say no to your habits, come into awareness. give yourself whatever it is that you're doing, 100%. When you do that, you're not off in your created world. That will naturally build that life force, the life force that's become wild, and even to the extent of being almost inhuman. It can be in its extreme, and it's certainly not human. That we're beginning to gather, beginning to tame, so that when it finally gives up, when it gives in, it goes back, it reverts back into it, the great mystery that it is. I don't like using the word energy, I use it, but that's so wrong. It is your life force, that so-called energy, that life force is so profound that you cannot even begin to imagine its reality. Do not underestimate it. Do not consider it to be a small thing. It is so, so profound when you see its true nature, when it reveals itself as it really is, not what you think that you've made it into. And by learning to gather yourself, of course you can't just do it one go. Of course it is an ongoing collecting yourself, losing, collecting yourself, losing, collecting. On and off, continually. It isn't just a one-off straightforward exercise. You are doing it continually because your mind is continually engaging, is coming into being and taking you here and there. Of course it is, and don't make a problem with that. That's just the way it is. What is key is to know it, as I was saying to you the other day. Know it. Know it, know it, know it. Even if you can't pull it back, know it. Even if you can't let not pull it back, if you can't let it go, Know that you can't let it go. It's in the knowing that is where things can begin to shift. So you lose it and you come back. So don't then start being negative around yourself and around the trainers. I can't, oh God, I can't do this all these years and I'm still all over the place. That's the way it is. And we can make a problem of that, or we can become negative, lose heart, lose interest in the training, in the teacher, in the practice, and with ourselves, become very negative because we're not pulling it off. And why are we not pulling it off? Because we think we should be pulling it off. If you didn't think you shouldn't be pulling it off, it wouldn't be a problem, would it? Obviously you have some expectation, and when you don't realise the expectation, then you become disappointed. That's called projecting. When you project, you create a mountain for yourself. You create tension. You create something. I can't do it. I'm no good. Well, you can't do it because you decided that you should do it. Nobody else has ever said that to you. The nature of the mind is that it is the way that it is, and you have to accept that. But that doesn't stop your commitment. That doesn't stop you picking yourself up. And not be disappointed and not beat yourself up so you're no good, and then go through all the stuff that we go through, well, especially when we're sitting here, all the negativity that can come. All that negativity comes is because you've projected something. I should be like this, and you're not like this, therefore you become negative. If you didn't create that in the first place, how could you be disappointed? That's what you've got to clock. That's where you bring yourself down. That's where you end up not liking yourself. Feeling negative. Because you decided you should be like this. I've never said to any of you, you've got to be like this. But that doesn't stop you aspiring and doing your best, but not to hold on to that when it doesn't work. So what you do is that you are continually returning, and see that that's the nature of it. And you don't make a problem. See, there's a little monkey there that's just waiting to get hold of it. Yeah, look at you. No, it's all right. It's the way it is. Is to see that. But not let that diminish your commitment. That's the secret. That's the key. That's the trick. Is for it not to because you're not out grasping at something. Because you're not doing that. That doesn't mean to say that you can't have commitment. That's what you've got to find. This the subtlety, the way you've got to pick it. Because what you're dealing with is something that's just going to go on and on and on, and you have to accept that. And you're going to be thinking, you're going to be lost, you're going to be all over the place. But see, it's the way that it is, but still, whenever you catch yourself, come back, gather yourself, come back into that place of nothingness, into your awareness that isn't an object, that isn't a part of that thing that you've just been lost in. It's outside it. It's not caught by it. There's your refuge. This is going for refuge. Find it, return, and especially when you're on the cushion, you can stay there longer, and then you get the sense of openness and spaciousness, the silence that has no parameters, the peace and the liberation, the freedom that you find, that we all desire. All of this comes from awareness. This is not separate. It's just because it matures and fills and begins to realise. And say who it is, what it is, whatever. But it begins to realise its own nature. That it's not some piddly little thing that belongs to a person. This is my awareness. from that extreme of non-understanding, slowly that awareness. Awareness wakes up to itself and realizes what it is, what it truly is. Not what it isn't, but what it truly is. And all of this comes from your willingness to return to that awareness, to return to awareness over and over through your day, to catch yourself and to come back and to see that you're pulling. Without that commitment, you're not going to even put your hands on the reins. It's just going to go wherever it wants to go. Now you just gently and kindly restrain. And see that when you do that, you are containing, and you get this sense of you're carrying something. For sure, that's exactly what you're doing. And to carry it with you, and to go through your day, and to live your life. Nobody has to know. You don't have to go out telling people. You just carry it and function as normal, as natural, and as humanly as you possibly can, and contain it. Because in time, if you can contain it, it will show its impermanence, that it's gathered, and if you don't allow it to run through the habits, it will then revert back into its true nature. And when it goes back into its true nature, you have every possibility of losing some of the habits that has been caught up in. That's how we become free, how we begin to taste liberation. Parts of our conditionality fade away, drop away, melt away, however you want to describe, because we're no longer reinforcing, no longer feeding, but learning to stay with, learning to carry in the body, learning to stay with ourselves, with whatever we're doing, and not allowing that to run off through a habit, learn to contain. If you can do that in your daily life, feel that little tension, which is okay, which is slightly unpleasant, of course, but it's okay, it's manageable. Feel that, and then you feel, then you know you just got your hands on the reins. You're just going like this. You're just resisting the temptations, resisting the habits of running after desires or aversions. Any whatever your reactions are, your fears, giving into your fears. whatever the picture, it doesn't matter. That you're not investing the life force in these things, but you're saying no, because you have a life, you have awareness where you can say no. If you don't have awareness, you can't say no. You say no, and you see it, and then the frustration can then build. The frustration of restlessness, really, because that's what it is, because it's the restless mind. The mind is restless, perpetually. In fact, if the mind wasn't restless, you wouldn't have a mind. It's by definition restless, because it's always moving. It's never still. It's never at peace. It's always looking, always wanted to become. Awareness is not a part of that. So you bring awareness into that place. So that restlessness begins, you're slowly reining in the restlessness. And the heart, the life force that is needed for these things to come into volition, that gives them volition, the chaitana, the volition that we need to act out these thoughts and pictures. You can do that. If you can get that sense there, that's our training. You're right, absolutely right on the button. You don't worry about anything else. You don't worry about change and all the rest of it. Everything else will take its own natural course. You don't have to do anything. It's none of your business. Change is none of your business. Your business is to develop the ability. This is why it's called a training. It's not here, it's a physical, it's a physical doing, a physical engagement, a physical experience, where you just learn to just gently pull on the reins and stay with that. If you can do that, that's it. Part about questions, it gives me the opportunity to drink water. I can pause.
Look, on these longer retreats, as the days go by, awareness is gathering, and sleep, I suppose, interrupts that gathering because you're not aware. Would you counsel against having naps in the middle of the day then? I know this is a really practical thing. If you find a temptation to sleep, come on, would you be better off heading out for a walk rather than giving it to
it? Well, you know, I've spoken about sleep enough in the past. It's a great temptation. It can be a great mara, for sure. Sleep's pretty nice most of the time, isn't it? It's not exactly a dreaded thing that you're approaching. It's often I think it's a tricky one, actually. I think it's a tricky one. I think you can say, you know, basically that if you get a reasonable night's sleep, really, that ought to be, you should be able to survive without a nap. But having said that, I know from my own experience that a little nap can be remarkably rejuvenating, literally for seconds, never mind minutes, or certainly not hours. You definitely go too far with that. You seem to go over an edge and then it becomes like this, rather than something that you just get a quick sort of sharpness from. You have to decide for yourself, really. But if you know like on retreat, when you've had your lunch, you go and lie down, you stay there for the next 2 hours, that is definitely out of order, no question of that. Whether you feel a need to go and have 10 minutes, 15 minutes, if that's what you want. But you might feel it coming on, saying, well, no, actually, ideally you'd say, no, I'll go for a walk or something, to so that things can pass. You go through the other end. That's the strange thing about it very often. But because I think the danger around is that it becomes a form of escape, that you don't have to think of yourself, you don't have to look at whatever it is that you're looking at, that you're experiencing, and so you get out of it. That's right, Tommy. That's great marvelous. So many of us spend half of our time in bed simply because we don't want to be with ourselves. We just want to be unconscious, get out of it. Well, for practitioners, that's not on. You can't go down. We got to dump on that. We may have done it at some point in our life, but I think this is not on. And we need to minimise it. But you have to feel what's... I've often given you the experience I had in Sri Lanka after a huge meal. Very difficult, crashing after a meal. Heat of the day, enormous meal, one meal a day. Great heat. I mean, you're just absolutely right for crashing, aren't you? But I know that at that time, and my commitment at that time, and I think I was the only one in the whole Aranya, actually. I think everybody crashed. And I'm not going to give it to you. I'm not doing this. I used to have my meal, wash everything up, and I would go and sit. And I would sit, and that sleep would come to me. or that temptation of sleep and the drowsiness, the doziness. But I always, because of my commitment, that little spark somewhere in that mist was a little spark that I would hold on to and not give in to it. And of course that's all I was doing, was hanging on. There wasn't any sense of any sort of investigation or whatever was going on. It was merely a case of hanging on by the fingernails. And then after 10 minutes, 15 minutes of just hanging on, completely vanish, and I'll be as bright as anything. Now what's that about? That was very strange, and I always took that as being Mara, just exploiting what could be a natural thing, that you do need to rest after meals because your body uses massive amounts of energy to digest. But that doesn't mean to say that you have to give in to it. And sleep, definitely, without doubt, is a habit. And very often, the more you have, the more you want. Rather than if you say, I'm going to sleep 5 hours a day, 6 hours a day, and that's it. And then just get up after 6 hours. Or just lie there, and then six becomes seven, and seven becomes eight. And the more you get, the more you get so tired, you can get so tired that you're just tired all the time. That's there's something weird about all of that. That's not a physiological thing. There's something going on there. And I think is that for us people, we have to be very wary of that. So like in the afternoon, if you want to quick 10-15 minutes, I think that's probably okay. It can revitalise you. But like I say, if you're going to be crashing out for the majority of the time, I mean, in terms of this retreat, you've got 8 hours sleep, theoretically, from 10 till 6, which is a massive... I mean, that should be more than enough for any healthy adult. 8 hours is a huge amount, you know? But I'd be very careful. And if you're a bit funny around it, then go for a walk and wake yourself up. Because that's all part of the skillfulness, isn't it? That's all part of dealing with our stuff and our habits. Sleep is a habit. you know, if you live in a monastery, you'll be up at 3 o'clock in the morning. They all survive. And they're not up at 3 o'clock in the morning because they're a bunch of sadomasochists. It's because you've got to be very careful of these forces, these habits that we get, these maras that we carry. You've got to confront these fellows, and don't go there, and don't buy into them, and don't give them the habit that they crave, which is all designed to take you away from waking up to who you are. So you stay in this soporific, ignorant state. that's all part of the landscape of training, along with all the other maras that come to us, and a continual procession that we have to wake up to and become skillful with. So, definitely avoid it. Avoid indulging. That's not on. That's definitely there's no ambiguity around that. And that, of course, also includes not sleeping when there's a talk going on, which is a great temptation to remain awake and to remain clear and receptive in itself is a challenge. And a lot of people don't rise to that challenge, as I can testify. Because it's not difficult to observe those who are being attentive and those that are not being attentive. But there you go. This isn't the army. If that's your choice.
You talked yesterday about the fact that we don't like ourselves is the primary reason why we're not happy being in the present moment. And it seems that forgiveness is one way to heal that. And you don't think something about any pointers on how we can forgive ourselves.
Well, by waking up to the conflict is a major... Everything returns to awareness. I'd be brighten to know. In your awareness, there's a knowing. There's a seer that looks, that if you give it space, knows. It looks and it begins to wake up, begins to see the world that it's consumed by. Now, whether that's one of self-loathing or whether it's about loathing other people or... it's a general overview, it's a general view of just seeing how we create. And one of those things, one of those features that we do create is this relationship with ourselves in a very direct way. Not our relationships with others, there is that, but there's also that bit about, hopefully you begin to wake up to see that actually there's no difference between the two. But the immediate impact obviously is you observing yourself and seeing that almost you can have a running commentary at times of just putting yourself down, for example, always finding fault, always putting yourself down. It's very difficult. You know, we all want to just want to go and take a pill and get rid of it. Well, that's where sleep comes in. There's one pill that we take. But you have to wake up to that and realise what you're doing to yourself and see the conflict and how you are being continually reactive towards yourself. And again, to learn to wake up to see that and learn, and when you catch yourself doing it, try and divert yourself in some, just stop doing it, divert it, certainly be aware of it. And see that, you know, these things have got great power, and I don't know that there is a quick, easy way out of this. Well, in fact, there isn't a quick, easy way out. I mean, there are different meditation techniques that have been put in place. We don't actually have those as a sort of formal part of what we do because we don't have a conceptual practice. Because essentially, as I say, when you wake up to see what you're doing with this. This is nothing more than an exercise in loving kindness, both to yourself and to others, and see that actually there's no difference between self and other. And the whole of the training, the whole of the constraining, the returning, as I've been saying, of learning to restrain those habits, not to go down those is precisely the healing process that we have. That's actually aimed directly at ourselves, even though it has pictures of being out there and more complicated. It is actually about learning to cool the relationship that we have with ourselves, the dualistic relationship and the tension and the negativity that comes out of that. To try and bring positivity towards yourself. When you can so easily beat yourself up, but can you also just as easily be kind to yourself and say, well, actually, you know, I'm okay, I'm doing all right, I'm not a bad person. Actually, if I was a bad person, I would probably be in jail or in hospital being beaten up or I don't know, all sorts of things. The fact is that it's not like that, and I am doing my very best to be a human being. And I do have qualities, and I do think what you do in your life, that you are kind to other people, that you speak to people in a kindly way, and maybe you do things to help people. Look for positive things. It's so easy to look for the negative, because that's the habit that you've got into. That's the antidote. In the same as that you get, you know, you've got loving kindness meditation. That is an antidote. That is something that you put in place instead of. When that's in place, when you have this sense of loving kindness, obviously you're not in a place of dislike, because you've put it in its place. But it's like it's a prop, it's a help. It is not the cure. It can't cure, because it's still superficial. It's still conceptual. It's still ideas and stuff. But they're helpful things. They can be, you know, they can be a skillful means. But ultimately, the way that you truly become, you make friends with yourself, and you go beyond conflict with yourself, is that you wake up to yourself and you see what you're doing to yourself, and you learn to understand what all that's about, and then you break the habit, then you just don't go there anymore. And so that change takes place through wisdom, not through doing something, but along the way we can be skillful, we can help the thing along, if you like. Although the thing itself is never going to ultimately do it. And I always realise that it is about being kind to yourself. It is about being considerate to yourself. It is about that when you're about to beat yourself up because you've done something wrong, it's to catch yourself. Say, no, I'm not doing that. I'm doing my best. And know that you're doing your best. And okay, my best may not be great, but at least I am trying, and there's no need for me to be continually sticking knives into myself, because that is going nowhere. That's just going to make things worse. That is not going to cure anything. Nothing good, positive is coming out of that. And see forevermore that it really is a habit. It is nothing more than a habit. There's nothing, it has no reality above what you have put in place. And we go and dump it on our mothers and our fathers and our past, our history, on this person. This is why it's so essential that the fundamentals of this training is that you have to learn to own and accept everything that's in you, and not try and dump it and blame other people. Because whilst you do that, nothing will ever change. While it's over there and it's out of my and you disown it, you disassociate with the root of it, it's somebody else, I can't do anything, then nothing will change. You have to own everything. And when you begin to own it, you can begin to take, well, you begin to own it, therefore if you own it, you can take control of it. And you can make decisions about it, because you own it. This is mine now. This is mine now. This is not my mother. This is mine, my possession, my creation, my possession. I now own this, therefore I am now going to do something about this. And you look at it and you decide, and you can begin to make decisions about it, and you can begin to say, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not going to blame my mother. It's me. I'm the one who has to own this, therefore I'm going to do some. And you do, you have to have that. And then say no to yourself. I'm not going down that road anymore, because it's rubbish. And I just hate myself. And it's going nowhere. All it is a downward spiral. And you have to own it, take responsibility for it. Really, in a very profound way. Which is very difficult, and that's actually coming from a place of understanding. That's wisdom, that is, because if you can actually see that and accept that as being the truth, that is great insight, because that's not the way the mind works. That's not how it works. We always got this, the world, and it's always out there somewhere, and therefore I can't do anything about it. I'm the victim. I'm the victim of all of this. You have to take charge of it, and you have to sometimes be very firm with it and just say no, see it coming, say no. I've given the example before, exactly, of my mother when she died, or shortly after she died, and then reflecting upon her and my life with her, and thinking of the negative thing. I could think of the positive things, but to think of the being sucked in with the negative things, and how I was so deprived of so many things that could have enhanced my life so much more. I didn't have them. And blaming her. And finding myself coming to that quite a lot. And I could see that was actually, I was beginning to really not like her. And I could see that's going to end up in hate. Feeding something, coming back to something and projecting onto her. It's your fault. I'm beginning to see that this thing was beginning to go like this. Unfortunately, I got enough about me now to realise that I can do something about this. And I said to myself, look, if you keep doing, you're going to end up hating your mother. I'm actually not the greatest person that's ever lived, but hate is a pretty bad thing. And I don't hate, and I don't hate her. But I could sit, and I said, look, this has got to stop. And I said to myself, no, I'm not going down this road. And as soon as this started to come up, my mind started, and you can make habits of these things, and you can spend your time with these things. I said, no, I'm not doing that anymore. And I did bring an antidote to that. And I did then intentionally reflect on her good qualities, what she did for me, how she found life difficult, and how she's a victim of her life and circumstances. And actually, she did damn well, actually, when you look at it in the round. Certainly could have been so much worse. And I reflected on her good qualities. So whenever this need to be negative came up, I immediately, because I had enough wherewithal with me, enough awareness and aliveness to see what was going on, or what the potential was, to say no and then reflect on the positive. In absolutely no time, it all went. There was something there that was, aha, I can get you here. Let's stick your ma there. Let's have a go with your ma now. Let's get you hating your ma so you can go around with this negative. An opening, it because she died, so that created a situation like this. And I could see it. And I nipped it in the bud. And in absolutely no time, because I didn't allow it to root, and in no time at all, it just fell away. It absolutely fell away. And I just don't go there with that anymore. I took responsibility for it. I could see that my mother was my creation. That's the key. My mother is my creation. I made this person. Therefore, I'm going to fashion that person in a skillful way, in a human way, not in something negative, which is what I did. And so that Mara that was coming was going to exploit that possibility, gave up, fell away, and has gone completely. Because I could see that was my own creation, and I could see where it was going. And that's what you've got to do with yourself. And it's no good feeling the victim all the time and feeling sorry for yourself all the time. Because that, in one way, that's understandable. But you've got to wake up. You've got to start to say, no, I am not a bad person. Go away. Don't make that into a conflict. But at least stop the stream that's taking place, and to help it, think, well, I'm doing my best. You know, at least, you know, I could be so much worse than I am. Look, there's so much evil in this world. Am I a part of that? Am I such a bad person? What have I done in my life to deserve to be a bad person? What have I done? How many people have I killed or hurt or, you know, damaged in some way? Have I done any of these things? Well, I don't know. Maybe you have, but maybe you haven't. And maybe there's reasons for those things. But to look positively and to just say, I'm not going down that road anymore. This is here, this is there, this is what's in place, but I'm not. From now on, I'm taking responsibility for this situation. I am going to take I'm not going to be the victim of it anymore and play the game, the habit that's there, of bouncing and not liking myself, finding fault with myself all the time, sticking knives into myself at every given opportunity. For absolutely pathetic. When you stand back and look at these things, nine times out of ten, it's absolutely pathetic. It's a joke, but it's a habit. And it has its consequence. It has its feeling, the emotion, and all of that stuff. Even though it's ridiculous, it still plays itself out because you have put it in place. You have to take responsibility and begin to turn it round and bring whatever antidote, like I did, you know, in the example I've just given, whatever antidote that you need to bring in to just help smooth it, take the edge off, put it in its place so that it deny it its place, so then it will just fall away and go away. Whatever you can find, but you've got to stop feeling sorry for yourself. And that's what we do. We feel sorry for, look at my life. And then you think about your childhood and how you're brought up. And then we could all do that. What's been has been. We can't change any of that. But what we can do is change our relationship with that. And that's your responsibility. What you have to aspire to start to do. And then if you do that, then I think you're on your way. And all the time, hopefully, you're developing the whole path of insight, the beginning of seeing its reality ever more clearly, because ultimately it's wisdom that will see things off completely, not conditioning. It's your insight, you see it for what it is, and you let it go. You know it's reality, and you just leave it alone, and you let it go. That's what wisdom will do. And that's what we're working towards. So that's really all I can say about it. I mean, there are techniques that you can do if you like. We don't do it in this form of training. Maybe that's a fault. I don't know. Maybe Western people need to have a lot more focus on their relationship with themselves, because it is a big issue for us. But it's not something that we have officially, whether you do something unofficially. No doubt you do lots of things unofficially. But that's not my business, is it? But really, it really is a state of mind, like everything else. And you've really got to shake yourself out of it and stop feeling sorry. So I think feeling sorry for yourself is, as I've often said, of feeling sorry. You feel a victim, either to yourself or to life. You feel a victim. And that you've got to shake yourself out of that, because that's just not the truth.
Sounds like the example you gave of your mother and your relationship to those feelings was quite an acute experience of negative.
It was going that way.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It hadn't arrived there yet, but it was going that way. This is my point. I'm just as an example.
Yeah.
It's cut off at the pass, so to speak.
Mm. Do you think
there is a case for, as you've just been describing, that kind of recollection and reflection with regards to negativities that we feel that perhaps don't have a specific focus. So, for example, one thing that I've done is if I feel like I'm having a negative relationship with myself while sitting, for example, I might imagine a beautiful countryside scene that might come to my mind. And as long as I feel like it's in the spirit of the practice, it's a non-doing practice, I'm focusing on the hara, and there's a sense of, I can sense a sense of stillness behind that agitation, then it's like that that imaginative recollection can help nurture a sense of compassion.
Yeah. Well, as I say, it's really replacing or putting in the place of the negative thing that's there, is to replace it with something positive as an antidote. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I've been saying, is that turn your mind to something positive. If a nice country scene, you find that's the reason why you're doing that. It's a way that you can see a habit coming, you can see something these are skillful means. Ultimately, you have to know the truth of it. That's what will kill these things. These things will die. But if you find that is a helpful antidote. This is all part of the skills that we learn in our training. This is not just a one-horse pony that we're doing. This is an open forum where we have to learn all the different upayas, as they're called, all the upayas that we need to bring to help us on the journey, help us through all sorts of different situations. We have the basic, the fundamentals are there, which is the most important. But if we find that we need to just slot things in along the way to help us as an antidote, then it has to be okay, doesn't it? Like I say, when you start finding beating yourself up, say, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to think of something positive about myself. It's a diversion, if you like. It's a way of not buying into being sucked in. A way of tempering something that is actually beginning to undermine the habit that you've got, that's so important, that this is all that matters. Not liking myself is the most important thing in my life, which it clearly is for a lot of people, but to learn to marginalise that actually there's a lot more important things in your life than you not liking yourself, and begin to put your energies, put your attention, put your priorities in another direction, so that it all helps. But ultimately, it's insight that will kill it, not conceptual stuff. That's something that that's mistaking the finger that points to, we mistake the finger for being the moon, because we've put lots of lovely words and lots of lovely ideas. We layer it over. And we cover it over, thinking, well, that's job done. Underneath it, there are reasons for these things, and we need to get to the root. That's just a new pyre, something that helps to cool the fire down so that we can begin to work with it in a more skillful way. But if that works for you, that sounds quite nice, doesn't it? Well, is it a lovely country scene? I never thought of that one. Nice blue sky.
That's good.
Oh, what? Don't start living in that fantasy. We'll be joining the Teletubbies next. Bouncing around.
I find that engaging any
any form of conceptual thinking, it's off, it's up and away. Do you know what I mean? If I'm sat in meditation, eventually found myself in the place of stillness, and regardless of that stillness, the life force is being appropriated by fantasies, often self-hatred or similar to that. So my way forward is just to have a rule where I don't engage with them.
Well, ideally, of course, leave them alone. Of course, let them drop away. Don't go there. Wake up, see that. Yeah. Let them come to being seated. Of course, that's the ideal. But, you know, sometimes those things can come and grab you. Maybe on the cushion, but in your daily life, if that works for you, then of course, that's the way to freedom. But if you find that you know, these things come and they grab you, and you buy into them and you feed them, and they drag you down, then maybe there has to be, you know, we're all different, aren't we? You know, we can't all. That, of course, that's the idea. The idea is to be awake and to see. And when you're truly awake, you see, you don't, then you're free, you don't get carried away by anything. things show their true nature. They come to be and they cease to be. They show their impermanent nature. We don't identify with them. Well, that's the ideal place to be. But we're not often in that ideal place, are we? We're caught by our habits.
I've noticed that the very, very core myth, even when you do see right through it, inside, it doesn't go away. I've got a suspicion that that's with you until the day you die. You know, it doesn't hold any, no heat.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that's. I was reading in your book, the Sound of Illumination book, that it's so intertwined with the light force, maybe over lifetimes, that it's so intertwined that even when it's got no power anymore, it stays with us.
Well, as long as it doesn't influence your life, it doesn't come to you and possess you, then I think that's pretty good. And if it's still a part of your personality and it's around somewhere, then that's the way it is. I mean, some things definitely do just vanish, but maybe some things don't vanish. But I think what that's showing, that even if it is truly been dispowered, it's no longer has the power, it's showing itself for what it is. It's just like a mechanical thing that's a habit that just keeps playing irrespective of reality, as it were. It just rolls on, but because it's like a dead thing, it's just, well, that's showing the nature of conditionality, that it actually doesn't belong to anybody. It doesn't have a self nature. It doesn't belong to anybody. And it's just like a mechanical thing that's still got some momentum there. But if you can see it and it no longer touches your life, not to any meaningful degree, well, then you're free of it, aren't you? Even though it's, you know, you can still see it somewhere. I think that's a pretty good victory, isn't it? So to speak. Not that we're in battle, but but it shows the nature of the conditioned mind, that it is. It's just a mechanical thing. It's not a person that we are convinced that it is, that this is me. It's not at all. It's just a phenomenon that is neutral in its nature, but has a volition that we can't, this is me, this is mine. And that's when we turn it into an issue, self-identity.
I noticed the sort of proliferation of that very cool myth that you accepted. I noticed that it tries to proliferate, it tries to sort of come up from there and create the stories of self-hatred and those form into sort of like stories of your mother, you know, all manner of stories that creates a more self, I would say, lots of attributes that come together as the self that seem to come from that.
Well, it is, sorry, I mean, that is without those things, there is no self.
Yeah.
It needs all these. You know, all these dharmas, that they are, well, they are dharmas, they're empty in their nature. They're just things that roll on. It's when there's a part of us that grabs hold of them. But then I am this habit. And there arises the idea of a self. And it's for us to wake up to that and to leave them alone. And one of the dharmas that come is the one of I don't like myself. That in itself, in its essence, is a dharma, is an empty dharma. That doesn't actually belong to anybody. That's something that's been created that just rolls on. So when the conditions are right and it pops up, I don't like myself, is that if you know it's reality, then you leave it alone and it will go away. But often, because it comes up and it's a very powerful one, I don't like myself. Ooh, I don't like myself. It then becomes me. And then all the stuff that then come, then you suffer, because it's actually something very negative. But in itself, it's innocent. It's an innocent dharma that we turn into a monster. That's wisdom, is that you wake up to it, and when it comes, no, not buying that. And what will happen to it? Okay, it may stick around because it's something that you have a lot of identity around, and something that you've invested in, and it will gnaw at you. Come on, man, never mind about bloody empty dharmas. get real, mate. And so it keeps on until you give in to it. But if you can bear with it, there's a lot of emotion. You stay with it, you don't give in to it. You bear with it, and it's raging in front of you. Come on, let's have a set to here. This brightness, that brightness there, which is nothing to do with this at all, this brightness there, that knows what's going on, even though it's very intense. And the energy, the emotion that evokes all of that, you say, no, you just stay with it, you stay with it, you stay with it, you stay with it. And if you stay with it and you don't buy it, it will give up. It will fade, because you're not feeding it, because you've woken up to it. You've owned it. I am not going to be the victim of this. I am not going to play this game anymore. I'm just going to leave it alone, because this is a part of me. This is a part of something that I've created, and I'm no longer going to reinforce it, no longer to keep building it, to keep it maintained. I'm no longer going to maintain it. I'm going to leave it alone. and you bear with, that's the pulling on the reins, that's the emotion, that's the tasting of the ice cream, absolutely head on, where you just live it, and it can be wretched, it can consume you, and it can be, but you don't react, you don't fight it, you stay with it, you let it burn itself out, because it will, because you're not fueling it. And that's all coming from understanding. That's the ultimate path of freedom, is through understanding. And you're doing it because you understand that you are the creator, and now you're not going to build. What was it the Buddha said about building a terrible with these things? You make a building, it says, no longer am I going to build. It begins to fall down because you're no longer building it. Well, that's what he discovered, that he's the one who created the building. He's the one who put it there in the first place. Now I'm no longer going to build it, maintain it. I'm not going to maintain it any longer. That's what he discovered. And that's what we're discovering. So when you hate yourself, don't bring maintenance to that building that you've just created. Leave it alone. It's a long journey, but it's the only way out of suffering.
Yeah, I've actually went through a lot of that on this retreat, and I just basically beat myself over the most ridiculous things, you know, but I just kind of realized from this talk that actually maybe that's the Buddha just teaching us to love ourselves in some way. He's actually, you know, showing us our own, you know, self-hatred. Maybe it's a way of learning to love ourselves.
Yeah. We gotta suffer in order to find our way out of suffering.
Yeah.
You know the thing I had. I wrote it in my first book. The experience I had in the forest, of being on the point of insanity, of going absolutely the most wretched self-hatred I've ever experienced in my life. ten times worse than anything I've had. Absolutely tore. Do you know what it was about? I don't think I've actually put. I didn't even bother to put it down because it was embarrassing. It was so pathetic. It was not. And I used to stop and think, well, hang on. Here I am getting worked up about this. I could think of all sorts of things about me that this hatred wasn't going anywhere. I thought, my God, why don't you go in that area there? Then you got something real to, you know, something worth sort of tearing myself apart over. But didn't it picked up, you know, monks are not supposed to handle money. And which is quite a challenge in this day and age. You know, you get bus tickets. When you travel, you're given bus tickets. So that you just give a ticket to the, somebody buys them for you, gives you the ticket. These are the games you play, because monks aren't meant to handle money. So, of course, when you travel, it's a bit of a problem because you've got to go on buses and stuff. So that you get these tickets. And sometimes you may not have a ticket, or the ticket is not enough. And sometimes people actually give you money. They don't know all the ins and outs, and they give you money. And I stuck to it pretty well, actually. You know, I never considered myself to be perfect. I never tried to be, but I stuck to it pretty well. But occasionally I used to handle money. I mean, we're talking pennies, you know. I mean, if you had a pound on you, you were rich. So we're not talking about big money. And I guess I went on some trip and I used some money. That was a thing that Mara, you call yourself a monk? You disgusting thing. Handling money? Eh? And you would try to give this image of being this wonderful, wise, pure being. And there you are, carrying money around with you, you horrible. And of course you laugh at that, But I tell you, man, I have never suffered in my life so much with self-hatred. It was unbelievable, and it was unrelenting. It went, literally went on for weeks, for what I remember. And it took me to, I just thought I was going to go crazy. I felt myself absolutely on the brink of going mad. And I often had the image, I think I even mentioned, of running through the forest, screaming at the top. As you see these films, you see people who lose it, taking all their clothes off and running through the forest. That's exactly the image I had. Of course you laugh at it, but I tell you at the time it was real. And it was absolutely hating myself. But all the time it was going on, knowing that it was just my own creation. I mean, it didn't fool me for a moment, and I knew it was a load of rubbish, but that still didn't stop it. There's a contradiction there, if you like. That experience is real as anything, even though the scenario was ridiculous. But the whole time that was going on, I just did not buy into it. I just stayed with it. And that was the difficulty, was just bearing with this incredible emotional onslaught that was going on. But I knew what was going on. If I didn't know what was going on, I don't know, I probably would have gone mad. I don't know what would have happened. I would have gone mad. But it took every bit of my experience there just to hold on to the skin of my teeth, to stay with it and not feed it, not buy into it, not play the game stuff, just really let it rage. I say to a degree that I've never thought, so well, it's something truly broke at that time as it happened. And I stayed with it, and then one day, I didn't just go off with a flash. One day I realised I've gone the whole day and I haven't had any of this gone. I thought, you're joking. And then I realised it's gone. It's fallen away. And it's never come back. I don't have that self-conflict. I don't have self-hatred. I can get mad with myself. I can swear at myself. I say, good job you're not in my house sometimes when I'm on my own. Because I've got an image to think about. But I can get mad with myself, call myself names. But I don't make a problem of it. I don't come back with, oh no, not like that. No. I don't get, it sort of, it comes and it's there. Otherwise, you know, it's just an ego thing. I mean, I do realise there's lots of stuff to be working through, but I don't make a problem of it. That's the thing with it, is it, as I don't buy into it, I don't buy into that and then get into that argy-bargy over something. If I'm an idiot and I accept it, and it's not it doesn't become an issue. And that's because I didn't, it reached a crescendo, and the picture itself was no consequence. It was the conflict, and that was the insight, that was the lesson, that was the thing that came out of that, was not to buy into it, not to fuel it, not to get in there and engage in that, in the battle that's going on, but leave it alone, let it burn itself out, however horrible it may be. And it is, you know, to hate yourself is the worst. It's absolutely appalling to carry that around. is the most debilitating experience you can have, I think. Because you can get away from other people who you hate, but you can't get away from yourself. And so if that's just ongoing all the time, then it's, you know, it's not a small thing. And that's why it's so important that we learn how to deal with this experience as an ongoing thing. And that's the way out, is that you learn to say no to it, that I'm not going there. Leave it alone. And if you need to bring little skillful means to help you, fair enough. But the key is not to, is to see that it's your own creation and your own mind. And that's the way out of these things. And it is, you know, as you say, you know, until you actually, this is, I don't know, this is the reality of these things, is that you've got to suffer in order to understand it. You've got to have these experiences in order to get insight into them. You can't sidestep them, you can't go around, you've got to live them, open up to them, and see them, understand. So that's why it's always, that is actually the Buddha. Your suffering is the Buddha. And he's saying to you, look, here, this is, your liberation is to be found here, right in the, like me in the forest. Your liberation is to be found here, right here, open to it, embrace it. There is your freedom, there's your liberation. And that just evokes a different relationship to things. You see things in a different way. You see it as an opportunity to train, an opportunity to understand. Even though it's a very unpleasant experience, it's an opportunity to turn, as I think I said the other day, of turning a negative into a positive. So even though you're feeling negative, if you see it in the right light, it is something. It's your liberation. It's where your liberation is. And you talk about yourself and these things. That's your liberation, is in the middle of all of that. You know? So it's something to open up to and make yourself. Naughty people. I know it's a conspiracy. I've not always been on this side of the camera all my life, you know. We should have 5 minutes just to see the morning complete. Okay.